Welcome, everyone, to the Clean Water Act of Proposed Rule conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Persia. You may begin your conference.
Good morning, and this is Liz Persia. Thank you for joining our call. Today we're doing a media conference call with EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy and Bill Heffernan, whose farm she'll be visiting in Missouri this week. And we are having this call to discuss a proposed rule that will clarify and protect our nation's waters under the Clean Water Act. So with that, I will turn it over to Administrator McCarthy.
Thanks, and thanks everybody for joining. I appreciate all the journalists who have joined on the call, and I want to thank Bill Heffernan, who's going to also be joining the call, and for all of his work. I'm going to be down in Missouri this week to visit Bill and Judy Heffernan's 500-acre farm. I'm going to also be sitting down and have some frank conversations with farmers in the region, because one of the top priorities of mine is to make sure that we hear and listen to the voices of farmers and ranchers, and make sure that their interests and concerns are addressed and reflected in the work that we do. It's work I began about a year ago, and I think we're forming some good relationships. I've been regularly visiting farms and talking to producers across the country, and it's helpful to get their advice on how we can protect clean water, and do that in a way that doesn't get in the way of letting farmers do what they do best, which is to farm. And the purpose of going down to Missouri, other than it's a great excuse to get out of D.C., is to see agricultural environmental stewardship in action. And that's what Bill and Judy and their work on their farm are all about. And we have to understand how we can protect clean water and make sure we have a strong farm economy and how they can go hand in hand. So you've been paying close attention to our proposal to clarify legal confusion that has been really challenging our efforts to protect clean water. And we call this work we're doing the Waters of the U.S., which I think everybody is aware of and familiar with. But unfortunately, I think there's a growing list of misunderstandings that have been floating around. And so part of the reason just to go down to Missouri is to clarify those issues and to try to knock down some of the misunderstanding. I'm going to be giving a speech on Thursday at the Ag Business Council of Kansas City. Hopefully it's an opportunity for me to set the record straight, to explain that WOTUS is not about restricting farmers. It's about protecting downstream water quality for all of us and do it in a way that doesn't get in the way of American agriculture. Before I get into what we're doing on the trip, let me remind everyone why we're actually moving forward with this rule. Our proposal actually aims to ensure waters that are vital to human health and natural resources that we rely on, all of us, are actually protected from pollution. The kinds of water bodies we're protecting with this rule and with the Clean Water Act provides drinking water to 1 in 3 Americans. That's about 117 million people. And while there are some legitimate concerns out there with the rule and many issues that we teed up ourselves in the rule to try to see comment, we're hearing some concerns that really are, to put frankly, they're ludicrous. And I want to dismiss some of those myths about the proposal because, frankly, it's time that we all have a serious conversation about how we work together to protect what we both value most, which is our drinking water supplies, our public health, and our natural resources. And let me just mention a couple of the things that I think are really outside the pale that we can't focus a lot of attention and energy on. We need to knock them down so that we can really focus on the key issues. For example, some people say that EPA is going to be regulating small, unconnected waters, including puddles on lawns, driveways, and playgrounds. Now, that's just silly. This proposal is all about protecting waters that science tells us can have a significant impact on downstream water quality. That's what it is, no more and no less than that. And some say that EPA is going to regulate every last ditch. Well, that's also not true. In this proposal, for the first time ever, we're making it clear that we don't regulate all dishes. Again, we're just looking at what science tells us can have a significant impact on downstream water quality. And some say we're regulating groundwater. Again, that is absolutely not true. Our proposal is very clear. We do not regulate groundwater. We do not even regulate tile drainage systems. They don't need permits. And we're as clear as can be in this proposal. And some say that our proposal means you need to get a permit if you want your cattle walks across a stream. Well, that's also ludicrous. If cattle cross a wet field or stream, that is normal farming practices. All normal farming practices are exempt, period. We don't shrink current exemptions. We actually expand them. You know, in fact, we work with USDA to make sure that all farming exemptions under the Clean Water Act are kept intact, and we added 56 conservation practices to that list. The reason why we did that is to recognize the great conservation work our farmers are engaged in with our partners at NRCS and the value that provides for water quality. So let me be clear. Those practices that I've just mentioned, along with countless others, are normal farm practices that do not require a permit. And the bottom line is, with this proposal, that if you weren't supposed to get a permit before, you don't need to get one now. That is the reality, and that's what we need to talk about. Our expanded list of exemptions opens up opportunities. It doesn't restrict them. Again, conservation's great for all of us, farmers, hunters, fishermen, hikers, and the public. But don't take my word for it. That's why farmers and ranchers are already working with groups like Ducks Unlimited and Trout Unlimited. In fact, my deputy, Bob Perciasepe, recently spoke to a Ducks Unlimited group of volunteers, in fact, 1,000 of them in St. Louis, on exactly this topic. You know, they know that this proposal is good for clean water, good for our farmers, our ranchers, and good for the outdoor industry. And keep in mind that our outdoor industry alone amounts to more than $640 billion in direct consumer spending every year and 6 million jobs. So getting this right is important, which is why this is all about not focusing on myths, but on really focusing on facts and working together to get this done right. This rule is important to all of us. So I'm hoping this trip helps us ditch the myths and misinformation and instead helps us focus on facts. I'm optimistic that we can do that because I've had conversations with farmers and ranchers. I explained that I've been meeting with local ag organizations, state ag directors, and people who represent the real interests of the agriculture community. We've already had workshops on this rule so that we can understand concerns, and we'll continue with those conversations. We're completely committed to making any change in this rule that will help us protect clean water and support a strong farm economy and a strong American economy. We've already heard some legitimate concerns, and we're going to respond to those. But the point I think I'm making today is that we're really excited to be getting out and to address the things that we think is misinformation so that we can really roll up our sleeves and get this done in a way that everybody will be proud of, and I'm sure that we can. Now, I'm glad to have the head of our water office, Ken Kaposis, on the phone today, who's here to help me answer questions. And I'm delighted that Mr. Heffernan's also on the line to speak more about the work that he's doing on his farm. That is so impressive. And I just want to thank him again so much for not just being on the call, but for helping host my visit. And with that, I will hand it off to Bill to say a few words.
Well, good morning, folks. I'm delighted to be a part of this effort. We have a sunny day today, and we're supposed to have a sunny day tomorrow, and that'll give us a chance to look over some of the practices we have here on our farm. And we've been on this farm for 24 years, and it has a long history. And I'll briefly comment on that when I introduce you or myself tomorrow. So. My major reason for being here on the phone is to find out how we can further help in this effort. I think this is terribly important meeting and gathering, I guess I should call it, and so we're here to help you folks however we can.
Thanks, Bill. And with that, we will take some questions from the media. We'll take a few minutes to line those up.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of Jerry Hagstrom.
Senator McCarthy, I understand that this rule results both from EPA's own desire to establish the waters of the U.S. rule and also from court cases. Can you explain how these two work together to cause this rule to come into existence?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that this is an interest on our part to make sure that we're continuing to clarify how we address clean water protection. But most importantly, it's a reflection of the fact that a couple of Supreme Court decisions have come across that really have told us that we need to look at the science and we need to have a more science-based process to identify what waters are both navigable and those that have an opportunity, if they're impacted, to have a significant impact on navigable waters. So we're just trying to do what the Supreme Court told us to do. We started off a few years ago really taking a very serious, concerted effort to look at the science. That work continues, but we know enough now that we can propose this rule, and that science decision will be finalized before we finalize this rule. But this is all about the Supreme Court telling us that while we were operating the program successfully for a number of years, we had to make sure that we refined a rule that would be based on science moving forward. And I think the challenge here is that we've done a really good job working with our scientists to identify the kind of waters in wetlands that are extremely important for water quality protection and navigable waters. I think the anxiety has arisen around those waters where we can't categorically make a decision and where individual cases need to be looked at and how we make sure that we narrow that as much as possible. But I think much of the confusion has been that people think that means that everything's in, when in fact that's not the case. We know what's in. The question is, how do we make it very clear to everybody? And that's what we'll start today, about what's not in. This is really the same range of land, waters, that has always been part of the close look that EPA and the Army Corps has taken. And we're not overreaching here. We're not expanding our jurisdiction. We're trying to provide clarity so that resources are well spent, so that the farming community can go out and do what they do and have certainty that they're not crossing a permit issue that they're unaware of or can't immediately adjust to.
Your next question comes from the line of Philip Brasher.
Ms. Perthy, thank you for taking the call. I have two questions. The first one has to do with the interpretive role and the list of exemptions you talked about, because, as you know, a number of farm groups are opposed to this, primarily because they're saying that it will effectively put the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service in a position of regulating these farm practices. Because in order to get the exemption, these practices will have to be done according to, including cutting hay, will have to be done according to NRCS standards. I'd like you to address that. You're getting comments from these organizations now. Second question is, you mentioned that you've heard some legitimate concerns and you're going to respond to those. Could you name a couple of those and how you may respond to them?
Thanks for this question, because I think you've raised one of the most legitimate concerns that I am hearing, and it was certainly a concern that we didn't anticipate. So this is one of the issues I think that I would point out. And let me explain to you where this interpretive rule came from. If you look at this rule and you look at our prior rule, you will see that every exemption that was in the prior rule remains here. There is no change in that. So normal farm practices are exempt, and we're very clear about that. The interpretive rule was actually of interest to both us and USDA, and we think many of the farming community, because it was a way to provide additional clarity and certainty. So when you look at the exemptions, it says normal farm practices. What we wanted to be clear was a subset of those normal farm practices are conservation efforts that have been extremely important to the farming community, extremely important to USDA and conservation efforts that have great water protection value. And we wanted to put those into a list that was essentially not narrowing the exemptions, but making it absolutely certain that you can do these things with no problem under the Clean Water Act. And we wanted to encourage it. So we thought that was actually a very, if you would, what I think of as nimble and flexible ways to keep, to identify 56 out of the gate, but keep adding. And it doesn't mean that those are in any way narrowing the exemptions. They are simply speaking with great clarity so that nobody needs to worry or ask any questions to understand whether it is a normal farm practice that's exempted under the Act. So we thought we were doing something really good to expand the clarity so that we could really reward these conservation efforts and enhance the ability of farmers to take advantage of these programs and the resources they provide. And it's been interpreted as a narrowing. So that's one of the issues we really need to talk about. I don't think anyone in the farming community or the agriculture community or ranchers will disagree with the intent. It's the form it took and the misunderstanding that that has generated. And that's one of the myths we need to knock down, is we're not narrowing exemptions, we're expanding them and providing clarity so nobody needs to worry. And part of the issue is that that's the whole reason to do this rule, is we're not expanding jurisdiction in the whole rule itself either. We're just trying to be as clear as we can so that water protection is provided in accordance with the law, and the agriculture community can have much more certainty that the work they do is well-respected and protected and exempted.
Your next question comes from the line of Cheryl Tevis.
Administrator McCarthy, my initial question was taken and addressed already, but one question I might ask is, do you have any... how would you explain the amount of concern and, I guess, uproar and disturbance regarding this proposed rule from the farm community? Do you have any idea what the basis of it might be and how you can best address it?
Well, I'll let Ken address some of this, Cheryl, but I think out of the gate, I want everybody to be clear that there have been concerns raised. I think it's seen as much more prevalent than it actually is. We're getting a lot of support from farmers and ranchers across the U.S., and their voices are being a little bit drowned out by those who sort of enjoy the anxiety that's created. It gives more visibility to certain groups. It's not an unusual occurrence for EPA. We've always had our rules go out and be challenged. We've always had misinformation spread about those rules. So one of the reasons to get out is to really point out that there are great farmers out there that are embracing the kind of clarity this rule can provide. That really do and verify that I think the agriculture community and EPA don't at all disagree on the need for water protection. Water is their lifeblood as well as ours. And so the real job, I think, for us is to make sure that the voices of those who really value this rule and who understand that we need to roll up our sleeves and work together to ensure that the final is something that all of us can be proud of. Those are the voices I would like to raise up in this visit so that we can get much more serious about the real concerns and the real language and work together and get these myths out of the way that are really just distracting the work that we need to do together. Ken, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would amplify that as we've reached out to the various farm organizations at both the national level and at the regional level, clearly there are some organizations that have been very vocal in opposition, but a significant number of the national and regional organizations have indicated a willingness to want to work with the agency to help make this rule workable for them in the way that, as the administrator said, allows the ag community to do what they do best, and that is to farm. And so it is a subset of organizations that have been adamant in their opposition to the rule, but we've been receiving a lot of positive interaction from organizations who want to work with us on this rule.
And I think one of the most important things, Cheryl, is that we're really trying to protect the ability of agriculture to do their normal farm practices and make sure that we draw those lines as clear as we can so that there's no, you know, need for us to have ongoing dialogue about what's normal and what isn't. And so a lot, I think the community most understand that the Supreme Court actually told us to do a rule that provided this science clarity. So we're actually trying to provide benefit to both us and the agriculture community. Not that we don't like to hang around together, but I think they would prefer the clarity so they know what they're doing without thinking that EPA is going to have to visit. I love them dearly, but we don't want that kind of relationship. We want one where we partner together and they can do their stuff and we can do ours.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Charles Rash.
Administrator McCarthy, you talked about some of the conservation practices that you're going to be looking at tomorrow that enhance this process. I'm wondering if you could describe them, or if maybe your colleague there could describe them. What types of things are you talking about when you talk about these conservation practices that lead to better water quality?
I think
that would be very helpful. But I know that what we're going to be looking at are conservation tillage practices, or no-till farming, which has become much more common, the use of grass swales and other protective areas to slow down runoff from farms and make sure that that water quality is protected, and in fact it's improved as it leaves the farm. And those are going to be two of the major things that we're going to be looking at. We're also going to be looking at some ponds and water retention structures and how they interact and interface with improving water quality. And Bill, did you want to offer some more?
Well, we'll be looking at some terraces, and we'll talk a little bit about rotation grazing. That gets us into the animal sector of it a little bit. But you've done a very good job of nailing. We'll be traveling on to see all of these as we go across the farm.
Your next question comes from the line of Cindy Zimmerman.
Yes, thank you, Administrator McCarthy. Thanks so much for holding this call and addressing this issue that's so important for our farmers. And I want to apologize for asking something not exactly on this topic, but it's also an important issue for farmers, especially in the Midwest, and that's the renewable fuel standard and the volume obligations for this year. You had said earlier this year that we'd see a final rule by the end of June. I'm just wondering if you have a new estimate of when we might see that final rule at this point.
I'm hoping it will come out soon. Let me explain a little bit about the delay. It has become very clear to me that in the comments we received on the proposed rule, that there's some general concern in two different ways, not only about what the volumes of the fuels are, but the way in which we're adjusting those volumes and whether or not the way we're doing it is really going to continue to push our joint interest in getting biofuels more and more into the process. Into the system. And so we're just taking the time we need to make sure that the renewable fuel standard addresses those issues as best we can. The administration continues to have a strong commitment to biofuels, and we want to make sure that that the final clearly reflects that interest. So it's taken a little while longer, and I appreciate that people are looking for signals that are appropriate. I think they'll be very pleased that we're taking the time to get this right, and they will they'll be seeing the final as soon as we can get it out. But I guess my goal is always to make sure we get it right.
Thank you. This concludes our media conference call today.